The following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Bhattaka Swami on July 24, 1990 in Bangalore, India. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 3, Verse 4.
Chief Prajapati by Lord Brahma. This made him very proud of his position, and out of pride he acted in improper way. So the unnecessary pride causes people to misbehave in various ways. So he wanted to show his greatness. He had thought he had the full support of Lord Brahma because he was appointed the principal Prajapati. He performed Vajapiya Yajna, which is required to be performed before a Brihaspati Yajna. These are yajnas very difficult to perform on this planet, but in higher planets they can be performed. So while this puja is going on, Daksha, he had a bad relationship with his son-in-law, Shiva. He didn't appreciate the qualities of Lord Shiva. Daksha is very much in the karma kanda. He believes one should fully enjoy life, and after enjoying life, then renunciation will automatically come. Of course, his idea was you should enjoy life according to Vedic principle by performing yajna. He was thus into the karma kanda. He was a karma nishta, but he was neglecting even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, neglecting to call them to his sacrifice. He thought, if I worship Vishnu, it's good enough. In the previous verse, Prabhupada explains how Krishna himself said, bhakta puja vyadika, that the worship of my devotees is better than worship of myself. Similarly, in the Shiva Purana, Parvati had asked Lord Shiva, there are so many types of worship, which type of worship is best? Lord Shiva replied, Aradharanam Sarvesham Vishnur Aradhanam Param Tasmat Paratarang Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. That of all the different types of worship, Aradharanam Sarvesham Vishnur Aradhanam Param, Vishnu worship is the topmost. Paratarang Devi, with one exception, my dear Devi, Tadiyanam Samarchanam. To worship the devotees, Tadiya, those who are connected with Krishna, is more beneficial. Krishna is more pleased when his loved ones are worshipped, when his devotees are respected, than when he himself is worshipped. For Brahma, Shiva, they are great devotees of the Lord. They are very faithful servitors. They are running the universe for him. So Daksha was neglecting the devas, the senior devas. Junior devas are all coming. They are appreciating Daksha's big sacrifice. So many brahmanas were there, but some important person like Mahadev, he was being neglected. But Sati, seeing a big festival performed by her father, she wanted to go with her husband to attend the sacrifice. So she wanted to go. This is a discussion where she's telling her husband, "Let's go. Let's go to the festival." She wants to also dress up and be there. Of course, Lord Shiva can see the whole situation. If he goes there, he may be offended by Daksha. Daksha is not inviting him, so it's not appropriate for him to go without receiving an invitation. All these things he can understand, so he said, better not to go. Of course, in the end, Sati goes anyway, and then Daksha offends Lord Shiva, when he offends Lord Shiva, suddenly become very angry, says that I've taken his body from you, but I feel contaminated, that the person from whom this body has been generated is an offender of the great Vaishnavas, and such a great soul like Lord Shiva. So she, by her own mystic tage, she emulated herself, and Sati ceased to exist in that body. She took birth again, another body, again married Lord Shiva, Himavati. Anyway, Parvati. So when that happened, that Lord Shiva came, his followers came, they're very angry, and there was a massacre, there was a riot. Like this, the whole story develops, and then Lord Brahma comes, and then Lord Shiva corrects everything. Daksha gets a goat head, the sacrificial goat head was put on, because Daksha got his head cut off by Shiva's followers. Bhrigu lost his teeth. It was a big fight. So everything was taken out by Lord Shiva. Daksha offered prayers to Lord Shiva, and then the sacrifice was restarted, this time with Shiva and everyone in place. Then Vishnu came. Then Vishnu was pleased, because his devotees were being properly respected. So it's a very big story. Several chapters of Bhagavata will be devoted to this story. A lot of different lessons. It gives also a very clear understanding of the position of Brahma, of Shiva, of the Devas, of Vishnu. A lot of confusion exists in society today, in our Hindu society. What is the position of the different Devas? Even in South India, there were fights between Shivites and Vaishnavas. There was attacks between them. When actually, for all the Vaishnavas, Shiva is also worshipable. The only difference is the Vaishnavas worship Shiva. Is it? Vaishnavanam Chatasambhu. Is the greatest Vaishnava. And when Shiva himself is worshipping Vishnu, he is respecting Vishnu. Why the Shivites should feel, why followers of Shiva should feel enmity towards the devotees of Vishnu. So a lot of confusion is there. That has been somewhat smoothed over. Shankaracharya is preaching, everything is one. Doesn't matter. The real thing is impersonal. Everything is one. So then, okay, then it doesn't matter what the form, because ultimately everything is impersonal. But this philosophy is incomplete. This is not the, that philosophy is not supported. That Vishnu is coming from the impersonal Brahman is not at all supported by the Vedas. In fact, this is a misunderstanding of Shankaracharya's followers. Even Shankaracharya himself said, Narayano Parobhyaktat, the Narayan is above the impersonal. In 14th chapter Gita, Krishna says, Brahmano Pratishtaham, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. In the Bhagavad first canto, it clearly says that the Parabrahma is situated in three manifestations, which are Advayam, they are not different. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Sabyati. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman is Sat, Paramatma Sat Chit, and Bhagavan is Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. So the complete form of Absolute Truth is Sat Chit Ananda, or Bhagavan. Localized is Paramatma, and all pervasive, impersonal is Brahman. So in the Bhagavatam, philosophically, practically, it gives these examples. Also, we can understand the Vedic culture. Vedic culture is very colorful. Here the devas, along with the devis, they're all going for the puja. They're going for the festival. What is the big sacrifice? Who is the sacrifice offered to? It's offered to Lord Vishnu. He's Yajnapati. So everyone's decorated. It's a big festival. All the women are decorated with their earrings, ornaments, and nice dresses. Any religious ceremony, husband has to be accompanied with the wife. So it's very colorful. Now people go to, Western culture means you go to some cinema, you go to theater, you go to some social function. But in higher planets, social function means some puja, some yajna, something uplifting is there, utsav, to uplift the consciousness. So the higher culture, Utkal, higher culture is based on spiritual upliftment. Now the perverted culture means that the same superficial thing is there, but instead everything is based on simply body identification. So Srila Prabhupada introduced festivals, spiritual festivals, all over the world. Ratha Yatras, Janmashtamis, and so many others. You see, those festivals, all the women may nicely decorate, everyone may come, it's a festive occasion. In the end, there's prasadam distributed. But there's spiritual discourses, there's various meditations. Even like on Gopastami, the cow is worshipped, the cow is decorated with garlands, fed sumptuously. Govardhan Puja, all the devotees, they go with cows and they go around Govardhan. A big mountain of rice, Anakut. Still this is observed in northern India very luxuriously, Anakut, to make a rice mountain. And then afterwards, everyone is fed. So not only all the human beings, after all humans, everyone fed, even the animals should be fed. Everyone should be fed on that Govardhan Puja day. So no one should go hungry that day. Commemorating Lord Krishna's worship of Govardhan. Showing how all the society is based on the dependence, especially on the cow protection, on agriculture. We cannot eat nuts and bolts. We have to eat agricultural produce. And cow milk produces finer brain tissue by which one can understand spiritual subject matter. Therefore, cow milk is very important for human society to develop spiritually, to develop that finer brain tissue. And how the animals are also dependents and part of the total human civilization. They're the dependents of the human beings in many ways. So Srila Prabhupada said the humans should see the animals like younger brothers and sisters. When younger brother and sister become, they may be weaker than the big brother. Does that mean because they're weaker the big brother should kill them? No, big brother is to protect the younger brother. Cow is providing milk, therefore that cow is respected like mother. Bull is working in the field, therefore he is respected like a father, bringing home the grains. When mother and father grow old and become unproductive, that time they're also eating less, they're doing less. But does that mean an old, unproductive mother and father, they should be killed? In some tribal cultures in Africa and some places, the old people are also killed. Cannibalism is there. These are considered to be subculture, to be uncivilized. Human civilization means you protect the weaker sections. So even if it's difficult, but still one needs to protect aged parents. Similarly, old cows, they should also be protected. Even that they're not fed sumptuously. If you offer someone the choice, would you rather eat the few chapatis or so much trouble to eat, maybe instead I can kill you? Who will choose, okay, kill me, I won't eat anymore. No one wants to die prematurely. So, like the Vedic culture is very broad. It deals with the total upliftment of human society. So part of that are the finer aspects, festivals, spiritual festivals, pujas, yajnas, beautiful parks, nice decorations of the body, not for the any other purpose, but because it's a spiritual occasion, it's a festival, they're going to worship Vishnu, so wear your best. So the social instincts are also fulfilled, but they're dovetailed to a spiritual purpose. Prabhupada explained how without the goal of life being fixed, that human society becomes an aimless society. If economics are the only objective of human society, you see, then it becomes a godless society, demoniac society, then so many crimes against nature and God will be performed. That if the world is to be actually peaceful world, harmonious, balanced world, the objective of life has to be fixed. The objective is to reach God, to serve God, to realize the Self and the Supreme Self. If we take out the objective, then naturally everything else also becomes aimless. If you put in the objective. Prabhupada said you can put so many zeros, but without the one, it remains zero. You put one in front, then everything becomes valuable. So what is the one? One is the goal of life. We should understand who is the goal. Goal of life is to realize God. If we have God realization, automatically self is included within God. Krishna explains that all living entities are my part and parcel. Amai vamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatano. My eternal parts and parcels. So if we realize Krishna, we realize ourselves because we are part of Krishna. Aham brahmasmi. We are the spirit. If we realize Param Brahma, we realize also Brahma. So Krishna himself is the Param Brahma. Whether you call as Krishna or by whatever name one addresses the Supreme God, Allah, Jehovah, whatever it may be, there's only one Supreme. The objective is to achieve the Supreme. As Krishna says, or as the Vedas say, Vasudeva Kutumbukam, every whole world is one family under God. Then we should work for the collective upliftment, protection. Everything is related with the Supreme. Soon as there is imbalance, there becomes disturbance. Daksha is also creating an imbalance. So that also created a reaction. Whatever we do, there's a reaction going to come. If we do something good, we get good reaction. We do something bad, we get bad reaction. If we do some transcendental activity directed to Vishnu directly, then there's no material reaction. There's a spiritual upliftment. So the devotees, they're actually neither good nor bad. In this material world, there's the powers of good and evil who are always combating with each other. Sometimes the good prevails, sometimes the evil. The devas and the demons, or asuras. Suras and asuras. Suras mean they accept the supremacy of Vishnu. According to Vedas, who is a sura, he who accepts that the Supreme God is Vishnu. And asura mean those who don't accept, viparito, those who are against the Supreme God. So demonic society which does not accept that the supreme control or supreme power of God, naturally they think that we are the controllers of earth, we are the owners of earth, we can do whatever we like. It's our nature to do it. Result is that so many imbalances come because they are not the ultimate power. Krishna has created the world with a particular balance, the universe. When we start to mess it up, then naturally we are creating more and more problems for ourselves. So Krishna, as the Vishnu as maintainer, he has to always come down and straighten out the messes that the humans create. As Brahma, he had to lift up the earth, which had fallen out of orbit because of excesses created by Hiranyaksha and other demons. Dharmasthan, stop, anartaya, sambhavami, juge, juge. He comes to establish what are the religious principles. If human beings live by religious principles, then automatically things become balanced. If we try to create balance without religious principles, you see, this is very artificial. It does not produce any lasting result. Lord Chaitanya, when he discussed with Chandkaji, the Mohammedan Mula, who was appointed as a type of sub-governor of Navadvip, first thing he said is, why you're killing the cow and the bull? Why you're killing your mother and father? The Kaji said, why you're doing animal sacrifice? You're doing Gomeda, Asameda. Then Lord Chaitanya replied that in the previous ages the Brahmas had such power they could take an old ailing cow and by kill it and by mantra bring it back to life to show the efficacy of the Vedic mantra. But in Kali Yuga such brahmanas are not available, such powers have been lost. Therefore specifically Vedas prohibit asamed gomed. Five things were prohibited in Vedas for Kali Yuga. Two of which are these animal sacrifices. Then he came back to the point, but the cow and bull, they're like your mother and father, so why you're killing them? Quran also says that one should not kill a cow. There are specific verses to this effect, that actually the higher path is to be vegetarian, higher path is not to kill the animals. Two paths are given in Quran, lower and higher. Higher is recommended. If you don't follow, all right, to the lower. Then the Chandkaji admitted, yes, that actually our Quran states that it's many places it glorifies that one should not eat any meat. But our pandits, our mullahs, they don't understand these verses. They're generally neglected and they're promoting the lower path. There's a lot of contradiction in our scriptures. But what you say is correct. It also glorifies being a vegetarian in the Quran. So like this, they had discussion. In the end, the Chankarji chanted Hare Krishna, and he gave the order that no one should disturb the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a bona fide movement, and even I request my descendants, they should never obstruct the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya, on basis of Vedas, on basis of Quran, on basis of whatever philosophy, whether Buddhism, Jainism, whatever, he would discuss with the people using their own logic as well as through the Vedic understanding, he would establish this principle of Krishna consciousness. He would do it in a very humble way, he would do it in a very forceful way, he would get the point across. He would always come out successful in every one of his discussions. He didn't unnecessarily look for fights with people, but when it could not be avoided or when the situation was such that need was there to defend the philosophy, then he would do the needful. When he was in Benares, he went to the sannyasis. So he didn't want to go to the Mayavadi sannyasi followers of Shankara, but they were criticizing his Sankirtan movement. That he didn't mind. But his followers were begging him that we cannot bear to hear all these criticisms. They're saying, what type of sannyasi are you? You're singing and dancing Hare Krishna in the street with all the people. You're taking the not only Brahmins, but all the type of caste and creed, everyone you're taking together. So I said, what type of sannyasi is this? He's a sentimentalist. He's ruining Hindu Dharma, etc., etc. So we cannot bear to hear all these criticisms. Just at that time, one big rich man, he came to invite Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You please come to my house. I'm going to have a special festival for all sannyasis. All the Shankara sannyasis have agreed to come, but I also request that you should come. So he would normally not go where these Shankara sannyasis were, but he agreed to go. So Prakashananda Saraswati was the chief acharya there. He had 50,000 disciples. So all the prominent disciples were gathered in this big Lord's house. And Lord Chaitanya came, and it was the custom at the doorway that people would bathe their feet and then wash their feet and they'd walk in. And Lord Chaitanya sat right down next to the, in that dirty water. He just sat there while all the other sannyasis were sitting up in their raised area. So then he started to also emit Brahma Jyoti from his body. So that attracted all the Mayavadi sannyasis. They are attracted by Jyoti. So the Prakashananda Saraswati said, what are you doing sitting in that dirty place? He said, no, you are already great sannyasis. I am very insignificant. How can I sit amongst all of you? I am just taking my natural position here. I am not worthy to sit amongst you. I am a lower, you see, category of sannyasi than all of you. Then Prakashana said, no, what you are speaking, all this. He went and grabbed him and just brought him amongst them. And so immediately he had already, by his humility, he won their hearts to some extent. He said, then he explained that you are one of us. You took initiation from Keshav Bharati. We understand he's in the Bharati school, is one of our Swarasampradaya. So why you are chanting all this Hare Krishna in the street, and why you are singing and dancing, why you are not studying Vedanta with all of us? Lord Chaitanya, he spoke to them, I can speak something if you don't mind. No, you please speak to us. So then he explained that I went to my guru told me that you are a fool. So don't spend your time studying the Vedanta Sutra. That in this age, the Vedas say that Harinama, Harinama, Harinamaiva, Kevalam, Kalova, Nasteva, 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 Gati, Anyata. There's no other way, no other way, no other way to achieve, guaranteed to achieve success. In self-realization, age of Kali, simply chant Hare Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. This is the recommended process in age of Kali. So, I began to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare, Mahamantra. I was chanting, then I found that sometime I was feeling great ecstasies, tears were coming in my eyes, my hairs were standing on end, I was sometime laughing, sometime crying, sometime dancing, and I thought maybe I'd become mad. So I went to my guru and I asked what kind of mantra you gave me. By chanting this mantra I become like a madman, and the crying and dancing and what, am I doing something wrong? And his guru explained that no, these are very good signs. These are the signs of love of Krishna, Krishna prema coming in your consciousness. So you go on chanting and there's nothing wrong with that. These are all auspicious signs. For this reason, I am chanting and dancing on the order of my guru. It's according to the Vedas. So then, like this, they had a lengthy discussion, actually. They said, well, that's quite all right, but you could still study the Vedanta. And then they had discussion, and Lord Chaitanya explained how the Vedanta, actual Vedanta, the Janmadisyataha, everything is coming from the one source. Everything is coming from one origin. So, ultimately this proves, since we are a person, we have qualities, the origin must also have qualities. How can something come from nothing? How can that come from the origin if the origin doesn't have it? If we have quality, the origin must have quality. If we have personality, the origin must have person or personality. This way, a very technical discussion on Vedanta, on Advaita philosophy, on a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. And then finally, this way, Lord Chaitanya, really going in very humbly, really, he was able to completely establish the principle of spiritual duality, of spiritual diversity, unity and diversity, as the actual understanding of spiritual life, as the complete understanding. The Advaita, or completely non-differentiated reality, we couldn't stand. So after explaining everything, then that Acharya, he was speechless. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had convinced everyone, but the Acharya also, he didn't know what to speak, because actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had defeated him. So while he was there, not able to say anything, his chief disciple stood up, said, actually whatever you've said, because Lord Chaitanya also explained how Shankaracharya, he was actually the incarnation of Shiva. In the Puranas, Vishnu told Shiva, you come and incarnate as a Brahmin in order to bring all the Buddhists back to Vedic culture. You preach covered Buddhism as a Brahmin. So, and you twist the Vedas in order to accommodate this philosophy. By people thinking that everything is impersonal, this will increase the population. People will become more materially attached. When they think the Supreme Truth is Nirakar, they'll be more attached to the akar of this material world, and thus they'll become more sexually active, and they'll produce a lot of progeny. This will create a bigger population. Later, his plan to liberate more human beings by coming as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spreading the Sankirtan Yajna, which liberates humans very easily. So now population is more, now we can liberate all the human beings. Anyway, that part wasn't, that's mentioned in another part of the Vedas. But Shankaracharya being Shiva coming for this purpose is clearly mentioned in several parts of the Vedas. So Lord Shankaracharya, he actually changed. He didn't give that clear direct interpretation. He gave a kind of indirect, twisting the things. So Lord Chaitanya pointed all this out. It was very clear to them. So the chief disciple, he stood up and he said, actually whatever you said is correct. So I know our guru is somewhat hesitating to speak anything, but we would request him that he should accept you as his guru. And in this way, we should, we all will follow you through him. Something like that. Anyway, they all surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they all became his followers. Then he had a big Sankirtan with all these followers of Shankaracharya, now became followers of Lord Chaitanya, so many sannyasis. But Lord Chaitanya, everywhere he went, he was spreading this message of Krishna Bhakti to everyone. This is our objective, that everyone should know what is the goal of life. Whole Vedic culture is based on first, Atata Brahma Jigyasa, first inquire what is the absolute truth. If we know what is absolute truth, all the relative truths fit into place. Once we miss the point, we miss everything. So this is the big problem in the modern world, is people miss what is the actual point.